life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. For the Dr. Stem Show, will give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
Good morning, Dr. Stem.
Good morning, my dear friend, Susan EKC. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good, good, good. Welcome again to the Dr. Stem Show. I'm so excited to have you back because I remember it was about a year and a half ago when you came in on the show and we had the show and you were telling us that you were going to be writing a book. And I promised you that before it comes out, before it's published, I would like you to have, you know, us as one of the talk shows that you come on and talk about this book. So yeah, it's finished.
It is. Yes, it is. It's finished. And I am in the process of querying small publishing houses and agents.
Wow. Now, I know you're still in a working title for all of you that have written books. You know how it is. You get a working title, then you finalize it. So what is that working title again?
It's called Rock On, Mining for Joy in the Deep River of Sibling Grief.
Rock on, mining for joy in the deep
river of sibling grief.
In the deep river of sibling grief. So it is about sibling grief.
Yes. So this book came about 4 months, probably. The idea was born after I lost my own brother. He was 43 years old, and he died on Valentine's Day 2014 in Hong Kong. He was on vacation with his 3.5-year-old daughter and wife. And I woke up one morning and I was in the depths of my own grief. And I just heard this whisper of mining for joy in the deep river of grief. And I didn't know what that was at that point. And then I realized it was a book on, I was supposed to write a book on sibling grief. And so that's what I did. And I interviewed 27 people from all over the world who had lost their siblings to murder, suicide, cancer, a drowning. And so in the context of this book, part of it is memoir, my own journey. And then I bring in the second half of the book, I bring in their stories. And it's been a life-changing experience for me, really.
First of all, you know, I want to congratulate you because I was there when, you know, I was still living in Massachusetts when you lost your brother, you know, at that time. And I remember how devastated that you were. So for you, 4 months later, to have this vision and have the courage to follow through with your heart and also reach out to families and put together, you know, to be a voice, you know, for all of them and also help, you know, other families around the world, which many will be helped with this book. You know, congratulations to you and thank you. Thank you for yielding to that call because it is not an easy journey.
No, it's probably been one of the most difficult journey I've ever been on in my life.
Yeah. Where do you think that, you know, that courage came from, that drive came from to say, you know what, no matter what, I know I'm grieving, I know this is painful, but I have to do this. Where did that come from?
That is such a beautiful question because at the time, I didn't think about it as bravery. I thought about it as survival. And interestingly enough, I'm a therapist by trade, a social worker, and I'm also a writer. And so when I was in grad school, I wrote my thesis on the therapeutic benefits of writing through trauma. And I taught this course to kids in the juvenile justice system, a writing course for, 5 years. And so when my brother died, what I did is I really I wrote through my grief on my blog, righttobefree.com. And from that, I got this overwhelming response from people who reached out to me as a result of those essays on grief. And I think that the idea for the book was sort of born from that process of writing through my grief, because it took me 2 years to write the draft, and another year just for the rewriting. And I cried every single day. I mean, there were days I could not sit at my computer for more than 15 minutes at a time, because it was as though I was living his death over and over and over. But because of all the research I had done around writing through trauma, I just had to, I was sort of walking my talk, if you will. Mm-hmm. And writing this story for the past 3 years has helped me on my healing journey. And then I also did a 35-hour training at the Center for Grieving Children, and I have been running bereavement groups for the past 3 years. So I guess you could say that I immersed myself in the journey of this very dark walk, so that I could truly walk into the light again. And that's the whole idea of the subtitle, Mining for Joy in the Deep River of Grief, because I knew in my heart that my brother wanted me to live a joyful life. And I think the most terrifying part of the grief journey, at least for me and others that I've interviewed, is that it's so deeply painful, and it's such a personal walk that there's these moments, these terrifying moments of when I would ask myself, will I ever feel joy again? Will I ever laugh again? Will I ever open my heart again? And I think what my brother's death has done for me, and I may cry and I apologize, but
it's
I think
okay.
What his death has done for me, it has softened my heart. It has deepened my compassion for human beings and the human spirit. And I feel like when I started interviewing all of these people, that we were walking hand in hand together, with both those that have passed on the other side and those and the surviving siblings. It's such a difficult thing to put into words of what this experience has done for me. And that's where the gratitude comes in. I don't think I could ever be grateful for my brother's death, but I'm grateful for the path that I've walked to healing, I guess.
Yeah.
And my deep gratitude for life and for every breath that I take and for every morning I get to open my eyes and live another day.
And you know what, the other beautiful theme that I'm hearing from, you know, and thank you for sharing that, well said. The other theme on the gratitude that I'm feeling is you get to continue, because it's almost like, you know, I'm envisioning the Olympics. Remember the Olympic torch that, you know, you have mm-hmm. one person running, and Rocky was running his life holding the torch, and almost like he handed it to you. So instead of his light dying and disappearing and just being history, you get to carry the torch and run with it, continue to run with it, because in this book and the way that you are helping people right now through the bereavement and how you're going to help those that are still struggling with recovering from the loss of their brothers is to help them also to hold that torch of their loved ones and continue to run the race of life with, you know, lighting that torch, that light, shining that light.
That is such a beautiful image. Can I share a story of one of the women that I interviewed? Because
sure.
I think that that's the other theme, is what people have done since the loss of their siblings in their own way, some in big ways, some in small ways, to really transform that darkness into light and to continue to carry that torch and to continue to carry their sibling spirit in the world. One of the most powerful stories in the book was a woman that I interviewed, and she writes a blog called My Inner Chick. And her sister was 50 years old, and she was in a very abusive relationship. And she was in the midst of packing and getting ready to leave her husband when, as she was walking out the door, he walked up behind her and he shot her 3 times in the head. And then he shot himself, and their son was the one to find them. And so her name was Kay, and Kim is her sister, and they weren't twins. They were a few years apart, but they lived like twins. They were best friends. Mm. They did absolutely everything together. So you can imagine this loss devastated Kim to the point where for the first 3 or 4 years, she just felt like a walking zombie. But what she's done as a result of her sister's death has created this blog in her memory, and she posts all of these different articles and things around domestic violence, and she gets letters from all over the world of women who have left these physically and emotionally abusive relationships to go on and to live their life in safety. And so that's her mission in life. And she said she had to do something with the deep devastation of that loss, but also that anger. We talk about the different phases of grief, and they're not linear, but anger, certainly most of us feel anger at the loss, after a deep loss of a loved one, especially when we feel like that life was cut very short. But when it comes to some of these violent ways in which siblings die through murder, that anger is so palpable, and it just becomes so toxic in the body that they've got to find a way to release it. And so for Kim, she is truly bringing light into the world because of her experience of losing her sister in such a violent way.
Wow. I mean, I just had tears, you know, just to envision, to see that. It's so devastating.
So devastating.
Yeah.
And her sister was on her way out to freedom when she was murdered. So, and then there's guilt, you know, I mean, there were so many emotions that happen when somebody dies, depending on what condition that relationship was in at the time of death. And that's another thing I've really learned, is human beings, we grapple with such complex emotions, but how do we move on? Because one thing that I have learned through this process is that every single one of our deceased siblings want us to move on and to reclaim joy and to live the grandest expression of ourselves. And for me, that is the best way to honor my brother's memory.
Yes.
He can't be here to live his life, but I'm here to live mine. And how do I do that? How do I show up in the biggest way that I can in the world to make it a better place to be? And I think it's our duty as human beings to bring light into the dark places.
You say it beautifully, beautifully, because I think one of the fears that people have is, where will I get the strength to even get up and go on? How do I do this now that I have this piece of me that's missing in me? And like you said, guess what? When you make up your mind to decide to say, you know what, I will get up and I will show up, there's a strength that is within you and from above that comes up and just helps you to get up and walk on, right?
And I think part of that, I mean, and I do think that this is true in our culture, that, you know, think about it. Sometimes organizations only give you 3 days of bereavement, which is just ludicrous. There are no clocks and calendars for a grieving process. It's very individual. And one thing that I've definitely learned through my own my personal process, from those I've interviewed and from the work I do at the Center for Grieving Children, is that I think what's most important is to be able to truly allow ourselves and give ourselves the time to feel it, to let those emotions pass through us. I mean, I'll tell you, it was a long journey for me. I was in deep grief for at least 2 years.
Yeah.
It wasn't that acute grief where I was bawling my eyes out every single day. But, you know, people will tell you sometimes as time marches on, it gets harder before it gets better because it takes a while for the shock to wear off that this person is actually gone. And then we really do that deep grief. I think we can get into trouble and get stuck when we try to avoid the pain, either over busy ourselves. Sometimes people do have to medicate. You know, I am certainly not against medication. For some people, they do go into a deep depression. And I think that's another piece we have to know when we need help. And I saw a grief therapist for a year. And in some ways, I feel like she really saved my life because I did a lot of work in that office. And I had a safe place to go. And I knew I had that concentrated time to sit, to cry. I wasn't trying to take care of my parents' emotions. I wasn't trying to take care of my other siblings' emotions. That time was just for me. And I would also say that is such an important piece of the grieving process, is to know when you need help and to reach out.
So as fellow therapists, you know, for both of us, you know, talking about for some reason it was quiet for a minute. So as fellow therapists, you know, for both of us, right, what I want to do is, you know, take a moment where, you know, before we get into the chapters and what's coming up in, you know, in the book, probably in the second segment, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, let's go in a little bit about, you know, the stages of grief, and also talk about, you know, how as you wrote this book, you were able to identify, to see what stages you were going through, and how others can, you know, see that, what stages, hopefully to normalize it so that people know that there are stages that you go through, and it will be a normal process of dealing with this difficult and challenging, you know, loss and grief. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, so in the first segment, I did mention that, you know, let's talk a little bit about the five stages of grief, you know, that is the denial and isolation, which is the first stage. Anger is the second stage. And then we go into bargaining, and we're going to go through all of them, you know, individually. And then the fourth one is, you know, the phase where people feel depressed. It's depression. And then we get into the acceptance. So how did these play out as you wrote the book, as you went through your own grief and also noticed in others, if you recall?
Well, at first, I want to say that we know the stages of grief are in no way linear, and not everybody feels all stages of grief either.
Yes.
Like for example, I never did the bargaining, for example, you know. And I think you see bargaining a lot when it's a slow death, like cancer, like. where you could say, you know, I'll never be mean to my wife again if you just save her life, God, you know, something like that.
You're right.
But I think denial, the denial was pretty big for me, because I could not wrap my brain around that my brother was dead. Part of that was his geographic location. I mean, he lived in Bali, Indonesia, and he was the spa director over there for several different hotel chains, Four Seasons at one point. And so he was not present in my day-to-day life. You know, we would Skype and talk on the phone and things like that. But it's not like, you know, I have four brothers, three living, and they live in close proximity to me. So, you know, you're together through all the holidays and all of that. But my brother wasn't. And so, you know, he would fly home twice a year. So the denial was pretty big. And my oldest brother and I flew over to Hong Kong after he died. And so even when I saw my brother and I saw him lying there, in the basement of the hospital, it didn't look like him. So I just remember waking up every morning going, is Rocky really dead or did I dream that? So the denial was a big one for me. It took me a long time to work through my shock, and I never felt angry. But the depression came pretty right away. I mean, I really couldn't do anything. I remember when I got back from Hong Kong and Bali, I remember just sitting in a chair and drifting off for hours at a time and kind of returning to myself. And I had just lost all of these hours. I didn't want to get out of bed. I didn't want to take a shower. I didn't want to go to work. I took a leave of absence. I was in rough shape. And people were pretty concerned about me. But the anger was what I didn't anticipate. And that was a big one. I'm not an angry person. And when the anger was told me that the anger would come, but I didn't believe it.
Yeah.
And then one morning, I'll never forget, I woke up with such rage. I didn't know what to do with it. I screamed in my bedroom. I pounded my pillows. What I can say is I didn't stay in the anger phase for very long, but it was also essential that I felt it. I was so angry. I was so angry. I was angry with God. I didn't know what to do with that anger. The sadness was easier for me to deal with than the rage I felt over his passing. And then I'll say the acceptance came. I'm going to say the acceptance slowly came as I wrote my way through my grief. And by the time I finished it, call it 3 years in, I was at a point of acceptance. But the grief, but the loss never goes away. And I think that's another theme that came up throughout the book and talk all of the siblings. You just somehow learn how to weave that in the fact, you weave the loss and the sadness into the fabric of your life. And just understanding at a much deeper level, the vulnerability of our lives and how precious our lives are. Of course, we know that people can die. We read about it every day in the paper. We're seeing these horrific school shootings. But until it really happens to you and you walk in those shoes, it's too difficult to truly understand that process, I guess.
Yeah. Thank you for that description. And what I like about, you know, us having this conversation as well, Susan, is that you just mentioned that, you know, no matter what science, research, people say about grieving or about loss, it is an individual journey. You will walk mm-hmm. through it and go through it your own way. There's no right or wrong way of doing it. But, you know, you can actually, you know, hear from what Susan is talking about and read the upcoming book and find your own way of getting up and showing up, your own way of honoring the life of your loved one and also carrying, you know, the light, the torch for them, you know, or for yourself so that their life can continue living, as you mentioned about, you know, the sister who's continuing her sister's life by now educating and empowering other women that are in domestic violence to have the courage, you know, to safely leave that environment, you know, without being killed.
Yes. And, you know, the one thing I will say to listeners, either if you are in grief, have experienced the loss, or if you have someone in your life that has experienced the loss, it's the reaching out piece. It's the safe place to talk and to tell your story. And And I think that so often we do not know what to do when somebody in our world has suffered a deep loss. You know, so often I don't think we know how to support somebody in deep grief. It can be frightening for us because it just makes us look at our own mortality and the people that we love around us. And I think for those who are grieving, they feel like there is some kind of an expiration date on how long they can talk about their loss, and that people move on pretty quickly. So going back to what I had said originally, having that courage to be able to reach out. And if you don't have close friends that you can reach out to, then to reach out to a counselor, because you don't have to do this alone. You just don't have to do it alone. Because it can feel very, very lonely when you're in the midst of grief.
Yeah. And the other point that I also want to point in addition to that is you're not responsible for how other people feel about your grief process, because a lot of people worry about what people will think if they move on, you know, whether it's right after, it's a year after, 2 years after, and they start to live their life. They feel as if, you know, people are talking to say, well, they're, you know, just moving on in their life as if they didn't lose anyone, or, you know, they're being insensitive or whatever comments they might make. One of the things that you have to understand and remember is you are not responsible for how others feel about your way of grieving.
That's a great point. In fact, I have a really good friend whose husband died of esophageal cancer, and she and I took a long walk not too long ago, and she goes to a bereavement group at the Center for Grieving Children, and she said, you know, she goes, I don't feel like I'm in that same depth of grief that a lot of people in the group are, because she said, I felt like I was grieving for the 2 years I was watching him die, and she felt guilt about that. And so I think that you're making a really beautiful point. This is such an individual process, and nobody has the right to judge anybody else in the way that they move through it. Because as I said earlier in this interview, what I know for certain is our loved ones want us to live a full life. They do not want us moping around and crying, but that's also, I think, a very necessary part of helping us to move on, is to be able to truly feel it.
You're right. And you know what, now that we're talking about that as well, that, you know, I'm not feeling guilty about moving on. You just mentioned a good point, group counseling. One of the things that you have to understand is if you are in a group that is making you feel so inferior or feel guilty that you're moving on, or you are at a different phase from everyone else, then maybe that is not the right support group for you. And I think I think people should have different phases of support groups, because you might be with people that are still at the phase where, you know, they can't even imagine moving on. And they might start saying, well, they don't think it's fair that somebody could just, you know, forget or move on as if, you know, nothing happened. So that's a good point, again, for you to be able to look at that and see, is that a right fit for you in that group, you know, that you'll be attending.
Right. And I think, you know, and I think just the flip side of that is when you're in a group and you do have people, I mean, we have people who have been in groups for 4 years there. So it can also be encouraging for somebody who's just coming in with a very new loss and seeing that this woman, you know, can thrive again. It just takes time.
You're right. You're right. So moving on doesn't mean forgetting.
No.
That's another point. That's another point. Moving on doesn't mean that you're forgetting. So just remember that, so that the guilt doesn't hold you back thinking that maybe now you'll be forgetting. No, it doesn't mean that.
No, I mean, my brother, on Valentine's Day of 2018, it was his fourth year anniversary of his death, and I carry him with me now. I carry him with me every day. I talk to him every day. He's with me. So he's just with me. His spirit, I just carry him in my heart. And that's what I meant by, you just weave it into the fabric of your life, that loss. And I just carry him, and I carry his words, and I carry his smile. And I carry his courage. And
Is this picture going to be on the
what?
book?
Is this what?
His picture. Is his picture going to be on the book? Because he is one of the most handsome brothers that I have ever seen. Are you going to put his picture on the book?
Well, what I'm hoping to do is I have pictures of most of the deceased siblings. And so what I would like to do in the back of the book is have pictures of all of the siblings, their date of birth and their date of death. That's my plan.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's an interesting way, yeah, of putting the cover. Yeah, I think that's going to be awesome. You know, talking about moving on, I'll never forget when I was still in Massachusetts and, you know, I was playing a song, remember, you know, Three Little Birds? And you say that reminds me of your brother?
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, we were talking about moving on, and I remember, you know, when we played that song, that I downloaded it and recorded it in many versions. It's Bob Marley's, you know, Don't Worry About a Thing, because every little thing is going to be all right. And it's amazing how even just, you know, with that song, because then I was worried about you, and I, you know, would call and just say, hey, and then we start singing. So, you know, it's little things. If you are a friend that's listening, that has a friend that has lost a sibling or anybody that you know that is going through grief, that don't be afraid to pull them up and, you know, and you know, try to uplift them with, you know, the phone calls, the music, or taking them out or doing something, because then each little step helps when you have, you know, someone who's lost someone.
That's really a great point, because I really didn't have any interest in seeing anybody. And it was those phone calls, and it was the text messaging, and it was dragging me out to go to a dinner or to lunch. And even though sometimes I felt like I was only half there, it was so important for me, to not shut everybody out of my life the way that I wanted to, because I did need handholding, and I did need to feel that love, and I did need to know that I wasn't alone, because that's the other part about grief, is just the depth of loneliness that suddenly, well, you know, for so many, you don't want to live anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's temporary, that feeling of not wanting to live, because it's not that we don't want to live, we just don't want to wake up with this pain every single day. But to know that that is temporary, and that you will come out on the other side, whether it's a year, 2 years, 3 years, I can't say, but I can promise you that if you allow yourself to feel your way through that loss, you will come out on the other side.
Wow. Okay. That's deep. That's deep. So I think the last segment, what I would like us to do is to go through maybe the setup of the book, what the people should anticipate, and, you know, what it's going to look like. And probably, you know, by the end of the show, we'll hear a tentative release date, because I know, like most of you, I'm ready to read and see, you know, I mean, and hear some of the stories that you have in there. So we're going to take another quick break, and then let's come back and dig into the book.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right. So as we, you know, round up this conversation where we're talking to Susan Casey about her upcoming new book that is going to help you if you're going through grief, especially sibling loss. That's what she writes about, sibling loss, in her brand new book. As you said, as we, you know, come to an end, let's see, what does, you know, the chapters, do you have like the titles of the chapters, anything that the people can, you know, hear that can, you know,
let me talk about the structure of the book. This is kind of a hybrid. It's a very interesting structure. And honestly, when I started this, I had absolutely no idea how to put this book together. And I do have a kind of beautiful story of the way that it ended up coming together. But let me just give you the structure first. So I thought about this book as before my brother's death, during his death, and after his death. That's the arc of the book. So the first 7 chapters are pure memoir. So the first 2 chapters are when my brother was alive, and they're vignettes of our time together, little snippets, little stories, to really show our bond and who we were to each other. And then chapter 3 is the last 72 hours of his life. Chapter 4 is my trip over to Hong Kong. I call it a trip through Hong Kong hell because that's exactly what it felt like. And then flying his ashes back to Bali and releasing them in the Indian Ocean, and what that felt like to walk into his home and to see all of his clothing hanging in the closet and his shoes lined up, and just remember crushing his t-shirt, his favorite green t-shirt, to my face and smelling his scent, and how I thought my own heart was just going to give out. And then chapters 6 and 7 are really transitional chapters, really my journey through grief. And then I launch into the stories of all of the people that I interviewed based on theme. So I have a chapter on letting go of anger, and then a chapter on letting go of guilt. Chapter 10 is the blessings and the lessons. Chapter 11 is beauty and the pain. Chapter 12 is one of my favorites. I don't know the spiritual belief system of the people listening, but I believe that our spirit lives on and we get messages from our loved ones. So chapter 12 is all about messages that siblings believe that they have received from their deceased siblings on the other side. Mm-hmm. Chapter 13 are these beautiful ways that siblings honored their deceased siblings, different things that they did to keep their memory alive. And then chapter 14 really brings my journey full circle. And in fact, I titled it A Journey Worth Taking. So that's the structure of the book. And there are 3 to 4 stories within each chapter. And then I also sprinkle in all of these interviews. You have to remember, I cried through all of these interviews. Yeah. By the time I finished, I carry these stories with me. So this doesn't feel like my book. It feels like our book. Through these interviews, and it would trigger a memory of my brother. And so I sprinkle in my own memories and what's triggered through all of these stories.
Wow.
And the other thing that I did was I bring these deceased siblings alive on the page before their death, the same way I did with my own brother. I think it makes the stories more powerful, but even more than that, it brings their spirit more alive on the page. But these were all real people, and you know, in the stories. And so then what I do is I segue into snippets of the interview with the people that that I interviewed based on the theme. Mm-hmm. So you know, like, how did Kim let go of her anger after her sister was murdered? So that's the structure of the book.
Okay. And you were also talking about how it came about.
Yes, this is one of my favorite stories. And this is messages from the other side.
Yes.
So I hit a wall after I finished the memoir part of the book, the first half of the book. I had no idea what I was going to do with all of these interviews, because you have to remember, after transcriptions, I had hundreds of pages of notes from all of these interviews. Some of these interviews lasted 3 hours.
Wow.
So I was sitting there one day, and I remember the day perfectly. It was March 30th, and I said, I don't know how to write the second half of the book. This feels like 2 separate books. How am I going to do this? And all of a sudden, I had this flash. I was sitting at my desk. I had this flash where I saw the whole scene in my head of Ryan, who is one of the deceased siblings in my book. He was murdered in a bar. And I saw the scene play out. And I thought, oh my gosh, I am going to write these in story format where each sibling is alive on the page and I'm going to segue into the interviews. And I got chills. And I looked at the day of Ryan's death, and that was the anniversary of his death on March 30th.
Really?
And I feel like, and I still break out into chills when I tell the story, because I feel like he helped me to figure out how I was going to write the second half of the book. And once I had that vision, I think I wrote the second half of the book like in a 3-month period of time. It just flew out of me. And I just have no doubt that I had help.
You sure did. You sure did. Oh, that is powerful. I wonder how many of those moments you had where you had help from, you know, above.
I feel like, I'll tell you another interesting story,
yeah,
is that I've got a picture of me. I have a picture of me and all of my siblings that sits on a shelf on my desk.
Okay.
And every time I feel like when I was in the depths of despair and didn't know how I was going to write this, I would find the picture. It had fallen. It was sitting on my desk. There was no wind in my office, and I feel like Rocky has been beside me the entire time I've been writing this book.
Yes, yes.
And that's just my belief. I know everybody doesn't believe that, but that's okay. Whether or not that's true is inconsequential, because it brought me comfort, believing that his spirit was with me.
And I think that's the unique part of this book and also the topic of grief. It is an individual journey. It is a moment where whatever works to help you to get back up. And if that's what, I mean, for me, I'm believing, of course he was. The book is Rock On. So if his name is going to be on that book, of course he's going to show up and make sure that it is the best.
Yeah. Yeah, I personally just feel like I have no doubt that all that that he has walked with me through this, because, you know, when I started this book, I had no idea what it was going to end up looking like. I mean, and let's talk about too the serendipity, how serendipitous it was that I even got these people to interview. I remember walking into my writing group. I've been in this writing group for a decade.
Yeah.
I remember walking in there and saying, it was my turn to be critiqued, and I submitted the introduction to my book about interviewing all of these people. And they said, oh my gosh, where did you find all of these people to interview? And I said, what are you talking about? I haven't interviewed anyone yet. I was just trying to show them what I wanted to do. And I thought, and they're like, well, where do you think you're going to get all of these people to interview? And I'm like, I have no idea. But the next day, I called one of Rocky's good friends who reached out to me after his death. They went to college together.
Yes.
And since that time, we've become really good friends. But I told her what I wanted to do, and she listed off 8 people that she knew who had lost a sibling.
Oh, wow.
In 48 hours, I had 17 names, something
whoa,
like that.
Whoa.
It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I had more names than I could even interview. I was like, okay, I think 27 is enough. And I think only 20 stories made it actually into the book.
Wow.
But it's just that faith. And so when things like that happen, we have to understand that there are higher powers at play here that we can't see, that are helping us all the time. The only thing we have to do is ask for the help and to wait for the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you, and I know my audience will probably, you know, say the same of how appreciating we are, again, of your courage, you know, to be able to put this together and to be able to, you know, give a voice. Yes, we are social workers, and that's what we do best. But you know what? It is moments like those when, you know, grief and pain affects us personally, and we have to heal ourselves or find ways to heal so that we again have to be well equipped to help others. And this is a beautiful way that you have done this to help those that will be going through grief, you know, the same way that you are. And let me remind everyone, moving on, you know, doesn't mean again that the grief, you know, has subsided, that you no longer are grieving because you've moved on. As you can see, this is a beautiful example of how Susan chose to grieve for her brother by writing this book that she interviewed 27 other siblings that have lost a sibling as a way of grieving. But as you listen to this interview, you could hear the theme that no, I'm not done grieving. I'm continuing to grieve for my brother, but in a way that is, you know, sharing his life as well as sharing the lives of others who have moved on. And that's what I love about it, the way that you're going to be shining the light on all those 20 people and 20 lives that, you know, have gone on, and now their lives get to give meaning to other people.
Yeah, and I want to say something else, because you keep bringing up courage, and it's so interesting because I cannot tell you how many times people have said that to me. Yeah. And I just have never thought about the courage that it took to write the book, because it felt like just this necessary lifeline thing that I had to do. But I do think that you're right. It does take courage to allow ourselves to grieve because it's so painful. But I wanted to share one last story. I don't before we end,
okay.
That was pretty powerful for me.
Okay.
I interviewed a woman in Israel, and her brother died at 23 years old on the Gaza Strip. They were bombed, mm-hmm. and he had 3 months left before he was going to be getting out of the service. And this young woman, Mickey, that I interviewed, they sighed a collective breath, just knowing that they're, you know, that he was going to return home safe and sound. And then they got bombed and he died. And I remember the morning I was interviewing her, and it still brings me to tears. She said, "I want you to know that I do not like talking about my brother's death." And she said, "But when you reached out to me, I felt like if you had the courage to write this book, then I had to have the courage to tell his story."
Wow.
And it was just such a powerful
yes.
moment.
Yes.
Because it was very painful for her to share her experience with me. And that's the other thing that I want to say about this. Everybody I interviewed, I felt like I was standing on holy ground, mm-hmm. that they were sharing the most intimate details of the death of their sibling and their own individual walk. And that's what it became for me. It became a holy walk with each one of these people.
Beautiful, beautiful story, beautiful story. Yes, the word courage comes over and over again, because with each story, with each memory, with each moment that you have even discussed right here on this show today, I just, you know, cannot fathom having the courage to do that or the strength to do that. But you did it. You took that and you said, you know what, if I don't, then who will? And that's where I find that courage being, wow, you're right. If you don't, then who will? Because then with all stories, if the theme was, you know, the truth that it was hard for them to talk about it, then guess what? It would have been harder for them to write about it and to let the whole world, you know, read about it. Because what's going to happen now is, as people read the book, as people know your story, as you do your seminars, your conferences, you know, these radio shows, TV shows, you're grieving over and over and over again if you had not done the work that you have done in the last 3 years. But because you've done that work, it is not grieving over and over for you. It will be a celebration of life over and over again.
I love that reframe. And I think that's true. I mean, even for me to be able to, I know how far I've come, because
yes.
I'm not crying.
Yes.
And I can read my book now and not cry. And it feels like just this celebration of his life and of all of the other people in this book. And I want to say too, that for for all of them, it took tremendous courage to share their story.
Yes.
The majority of them, regardless of when their loss was, cried throughout the interview. And they also thanked me for giving them the time to talk about their siblings. And that's the other thing I'll say.
Yeah.
Please don't ever think that when you bring up a loss that you are bringing pain to that human being. We all love to talk about the person that we lost. It's one of our favorite things, and it's okay if we cry. You can't bring, it's not as though you're bringing up a memory. We don't ever forget our loss. You're not reminding us. So even though it can be uncomfortable, what these siblings all said is, I love when somebody asks me about my sibling. I love it when they ask me to share a story, because it's my favorite thing is to talk about my sibling. So I want to leave listeners with that message as well. Ask about the person that your friend or somebody in your family, ask about those losses in that person. We want to talk about it.
And you know what? I want to thank you. If I was not there, then I wouldn't probably be qualified or be the person that tells you about courage. But I've been there through the journey, from that phone call that you got and you called me, mm-hmm. and said, Stem, my brother has died. And to see the growth that it is, that you have gone through and see how, yes, you cried maybe once, during this interview, but not cried the whole interview, to hear your strength in your voice of, saying, you know what, I have gone through it and I want to stand with the world to say it's okay for us to move on. It's okay for us to show up. I'm just, so honored that you were able to come, to this show today. And I can't tell you congratulations enough, but I will be flying in Maine for that book launch. my ticket is reserved. So when is it coming out? Because I want to have a party. In fact, remember the place that you did a memorial for Rocky?
Yeah.
By the water?
Yes.
That was beautiful. So I think, hey, the book is named after him, Rock On, and to have in that place where we celebrated his life and have the book launch there, I think it's going to be beautiful. But so if you don't have any other place, think of that one as an option, because I loved that place.
That is such a great idea, Sam. That
yes.
is exactly what I'll do.
Yes.
But to answer your question, I have just started the querying process, so I'm looking for representation right now, either from an agent or a small publishing house that will publish this without an agent.
Yeah.
But by the time you get an agent and the time it hits the bookstore can be a couple of years. But let's hope that the gods that be that are out there are going to help accelerate this, because I really want to get this book out into the world for so many reasons. But my deepest priority is just to celebrate all of these siblings that have passed on. And I think it's a really important time for this too, given what's happening in our world. And
yes.
lots of kids are losing siblings right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what? I don't want to be amiss. I also want to congratulate, all of the people that you interviewed, as well as thank them for allowing us to read about, their pain, as well as the lives of their loved ones, the stories of the lives of their loved ones. So thank you all for sharing those stories. Susan, we could do this forever. I'm looking forward to having
yes.
another show with you, my sister. So as I end this segment, I want to share with all of you a poem that says, I sit with you today. I sit with you today, and I sit right in your chair. I know I could not see you, but I knew that you were there. I couldn't hear your voice at all, but I heard every word that was spoken. I sit with you today, calm, but yet so heartbroken. I know you follow me, around. I know I have known it from the start, but sometimes I'm afraid to look because it is so heavy in my heart. I often feel you touch my face, or I think I feel you near, but when I try to see you, it's like you just simply disappear. I love you more and more each day and beg for you to know I find it harder every day just to let you go. I sit with you today. I know you know. I'm sure that was your scent that I smelled. I cannot understand it though, how you just suddenly left. I'll sit with you tomorrow if that's okay with you. Sometimes it feels the only thing I still know what to do is sit with you. I love you. Author unknown. Thank you for listening to the Dr. Stem Show.